Lord have mercy on his soul.
Although the dying man didn't make a sound, his agony was palpable. The veins in his forehead, as well as his eyes, bulged. Ryan figured that the silence was a part of the ritual of seppuku. It was a sign of weakness and cowardly failure if you were to scream out at the agony. The man pulled the bloody dagger from his stomach, then gently lowered it to the sodden cloth in front of him. He straightened. Mashashiga shifted on his high throne, his narrow fingers playing with the hilt of his own samurai sword.
Now what?
Watch and learn.
A thread of blood wormed from the corner of the Ronin's mouth, where he'd bitten through his tongue. Now, he suddenly plunged both hands into the gaping cut across his stomach and plucked out coils of his own intestines.
Dark night.
Loops of pink, yellow, and gray, smeared with the omnipresent blood, lay in the man's lap. He sat still, looking down at them. Moving with a leisurely grace, Mashashiga rose from his chair and walked across to stand behind his dying enemy. The Ronin sat still and proud, blood pouring from the hideous gash across his belly. Mashashiga stood right behind him and leaned forward, whispering something inaudible in the man's ear. There was the slightest nod of the Ronin's head. Mashashiga raised his sword above his head. Ryan could have sworn for a few moments that the dead man's eyes continued to move after his head was severed, but that might have been a trick of the light.
Amen.
The corpse remained unnervingly still, its hands folded calmly in its lap. Stepping away from the dead Ronin, Mashashiga sheathed his sword. The shogun then stalked out of the hall without a backward glance and without a word to anyone. Doc pulled out his blue kerchief and mopped the sweat from his forehead.
Can we go now? I confess that I would not wish such an ending upon my worst enemies, not even upon the white coats that blighted my life.
Hideyoshi nodded slowly. His eyes sparkled.
It was a very good.
It was? If that was good, then I'd sure hate to see bad.
Such honor and dignity. The ultimate in Bushido. Our code of honor. It was truly magnificent.
I only saw a life ended in a pointlessly brutal way. A man sticking a sharp knife into his stomach and spilling his guts on the floor while someone else cuts off his head. If that's your ideal of honor, then you can stuff it up your ass, Hideyoshi.
You barbarians do not understand.
Damn right we don't.
The sec boss of the Ville looked around as the room quickly emptied of servants. A couple of old men appeared with buckets and mops.
Talk is of no point. I will argue 1,000 years and never convince you that our ways are the right ways. It would be like trying to talk to a stone wall.
Couldn't agree more.
What happens now?
One of the invading band of Ronin was slain by your hand, Ryan Carter. Now they removed the body of the second. But there are many others. We have known of them for many long months. Finally, Lord Mashashiga has agreed that we will take arms against...
The Sea of Troubles, and by opposing end them, as the bard puts it.
I also know of Shakespeare, Doctor. Sling an arrow of outrageous fortunes.
More or less, my dear fellow.
You say that you're finally moving against this gang?
Yes, and you will all come with us.
Ryan kicked his heels into the flanks of the sturdy mountain pony that he had been given for the expedition.
Mashashiga!
The shogun turned in the high saddle of his own stallion, beckoning the one-eyed man to join him.
What is it?
You insisted that the women ride in those carry carriage things?
They are called palanquins, Kodo-san. You understand that it is only to honor you and your comrades that we allow the weak ones, these two strange women, along with us on this fighting expedition. There are no other women.
I know that.
The column was entirely male, more than 80 armed men, all with pikes, and many with rifles and automatics. 8 samurai accompanied them, including Hideyoshi and Yashimoto. The fortress was left with a skeleton defensive complement, the drawbridge up, and all shutters closed tight against any sneak attack. Mildred and Christie had been allowed along under strict tolerance, having to travel in the ornamented palanquins. Each was carried by 6 servants, the relays changing at regular intervals as they tired under the weight and the difficult terrain and the unbreathable air. The palanquins were like large boxes on wheels with curtains of embroidered silk, which both Christy and Mildred had thrown back because of the oppressive heat and stuffiness. They had knotted silken cords to hang on to as they tried to keep their balance in an awkward, half-sitting, half-lying position, struggling against the ceaseless jolting.
But is there any way the women could ride some spare ponies or even walk with the foot soldiers? Anything rather than travel another yard in those goddamn puke boxes.
Ride horses?
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Why?
Women do not ride.
Then let them walk. They're happy to walk. JB, Doc, and Jack and me will walk as well. Doesn't bother us at all. Been doing it most of our lives.
There would be a bad losing of face.
Not for me.
No, for me. If it was thought by the peasants that my guests had to walk in the dust.
And let the women take a pair of the spare ponies. I'd be obliged.
Your barbarian ways will never be understood by me, however wrong I try. But yes, let them do this. They will ride with their legs apart.
Only way they know.
Mashashiga closed his deep-set eyes for a moment, as though he were suffering from an agonizing migraine.
Let it be so.
It seemed that the gang of masterless samurai, known as the Ronin, had been roaming the land for some time, either years or months, depending on who was telling the stories. And there was anywhere between a dozen and 100 of them. The route would take them close to one of the sprawling metropolitan areas that housed some of the smoke-belching factories, then into the mountains and down toward the sea. The camp of the Ronin was believed to be on a headland jutting out into the ocean, something like a day-and-a-half steady march from Mashashiga's fortress. But like so much else in Japan, the real facts seem shrouded in doubt and confusion. Mashashiga himself led the procession, with banner-carrying warriors on either side of him, the huge silken flags proclaiming to the world that it was the great Shogun Mashashiga who was passing by with his army of retainers. Bringing up the rear were 4-wheeled ox carts that carried provisions and extra weapons. Brian rode in the center, with Christy at his side, her fiery hair catching the bright afternoon sun whenever it broke through the reddish haze of pollution. She wiped at her sore eyes, the bright green irises rimmed with painful crimson.
Ugh, this air is vile.
Brian stood in the narrow stirrups and scanned the area. They were climbing up a winding path that appeared to lead toward a steep hogback ridge.
And the land itself. It's either barren rock or it's filled with sprawling villas of little crowded houses and these stinking factories. And so many people.
Doc was just behind Ryan and Christy.
I lived in England for a time when I was a young man. The big cities, London, of course, and Manchester and Birmingham, they were rookeries of narrow streets and crowded back-to-back houses with noisome alleys running between them. I saw a dozen or more living in a single room, packed between the factories that vomited poisonous black fumes into the lowering air, day and night. Slums. Stooped, sallow figures, coughing their lungs out, and pinch-faced babies with hollow eyes and protruding ribs. It was a dreadful sight that I shall never forget.
Halfway up the mountain, they passed some kind of crude processing plant that Hideyoshi said was for alum. Low sheds stood between steaming vats of bubbling, foul-smelling liquid that was constantly stirred with long ladles suspended a few feet above the cauldrons. As the procession reached the plant, the workers came scurrying from their dangerous positions to watch Mashashiga go by. By the time Ryan and friends reached the spiked iron gates, it looked as if the whole labor force was standing there in an uncanny silence. Not one of them was over 10 years of age. The wizened faces under the layers of grimed dust might have been 70 or 80 years old. Eyes older than time itself stared blankly at the array of wealth and power moving by them. Mouths, toothless, hung open. Worms of drool cutting sticky furrows through the burning white powder.
Gaia, save them.
Doc kicked his heels into the flanks of his mount, pulling himself alongside Ryan.
I swear that those are the same pinched faces that I just described in the slums and back alleys of Victorian cities. If progress is the result, then those doomed wretched children are the price.